Thank you, everyone, for joining us, for participating, and most notably for everyone, or quite a number of people, giving some input, providing some input to the last document that I sent around. It's important that we get moving on the work of this study group now, given that we've got some deadlines within our work plan that we need to meet. I've got a slideshow that I'm sharing here in the Adobe room, which is quite extensive, and I'll try to move through it quite quickly. But broadly speaking, the agenda for this call is just, again, roll call and apologies. Secretary, do we have any apologies that were noted? I'd appreciate a roll call of everyone that you captured for the call, but were there any apologies in particular?
Yes, we have 5 apologies. We have an apology from Sokol Hakcho, Eduardo Diaz, Cheryl Langdonor, Catherine Reynolds, and Martin Simon.
Okay, thank you. Otherwise, everybody's participation has been noted for a call, and thank you for making your time, making time. I will very quickly, for the purposes of this call, scan through the work plan and our schedule, because we're just about to hit some milestones. Of course, Costa Rica is the first one, and that will just be a very, very quick summary. Beyond that, I want to spend quite a bit of time discussing on this call the UNESCO work, or the proposed UNESCO work, the survey, why we're doing it, when, the timetable, how long it's going to take, what it involves, really with the aim of trying to narrow down the categories and aiming towards taking a decision in Costa Rica. If you look back at our original work plan, that was our deadline, so I do want to make some progress towards that end. The agenda item I had listed there was specifically about the methodology and what is involved in running a survey through UNESCO. Mgata, I haven't discussed it with you previously, but I have attached I did attach on a previous email the PowerPoint slide that you shared. Thank you. I might just ask you to speak to that briefly later on. With regard, so that everyone in the group understands what is involved in getting a survey or getting a consultation going through UNESCO. Then, as I said, the next step is specifically the development of the topology. We really need to start getting things locked in, if not before, then particularly at Costa Rica, so that UNESCO can get their work underway. And then just briefly touching on expectations for San Jose and afterwards. Now, again, there's a work plan and schedule. Hopefully those in the Adobe room can see that. At the moment, the development of a policy overview, all of this stuff is historical now for the purposes of the group. We have done this. I don't want to spend too much time revisiting it.
Hello. There's 2 bits. This is Grigory Sagian from Armenia.
Hello. Thank you for joining. It's Paul. We've just got underway, and we're working through a summary of the work plan and schedule of the group before we get into the substance of the call. As I was saying, we're now at the point where topology needs to be getting towards finalised, UNESCO getting their work underway, and then we can move on to the subsequent issues, which include us starting to brainstorm collectively as a group, the main body of our work, some of the issues we see in the policies that ICANN has had and has at the moment, and how they may cause issues or problems or concerns, or where there are conflicts or inconsistencies or gaps in how country and territory names are treated. But for the purposes of today's call, I really want to focus on the topology. And as part of that, the survey that UNESCO will be undertaking for us, we've been discussing it for a few months now, the work really does need to begin. And for those in the Adobe room, I have put up the slide that Mgard had sent us. And this is not really all that complicated, but I was wondering, Mgard, if you could walk through any of the key elements there. It's a process flow document for how the survey might go through UNESCO. Were there any particular elements there that you wanted to flag with us to explain to the group?
Yes, Paul, thank you. So the scheme what we shared with you, this is just kind of a temporary one, a kind of a draft scheme which could be used. This is a proposal, it's not approved, but this is what it could describe better visually how the process may look like. And I included as well possible time frame when we would have results. If, for example, everything goes as it was planned and all member states are replying, you know, fast enough, and if survey works well as well. So just to let you know what, for example, if survey is ready and we have those criteria for countries established, we would need to prepare an online survey, so that would be most likely in March. It again depends if survey itself is ready. So UNESCO would follow up March, April with official letter invitation to those 2025 member states. And we could follow up as well with newsletter and other means of communication to other countries and other institutions if necessary. So that is as well a question, do we want to approach other institutions or not? And what it concerns the official way, we would need to get a reply from member states, from permanent delegations and national commissions, once we had the internal consultations at home, which of the institution would be nominated. So here you see official response by April, May. Which institution will be replying, would be responsible to complete the survey. This small number of member states, if we think about 2025, it would help us as well, would be quite easy for us to follow up. So from our side, we can, if needed, we can explain, we can add more information if needed and so on. And even if needed, we can engage with those institutions at national level. So we presume that we would be able to complete the survey during the May and June months. And the results would go to the working group, if I understand correctly, June, July. So basically, we could speak, but maybe the preparation of report could start even in I don't know, depending again, June or July. So that is a proposed timetable. It's for you to tell me whether it is really according to ICANN's plans the whole process described, if it is appropriate, because we still can modify, and it's just only a draft proposal. So you're welcome.
Thank you for that. It's worth noting something that I hadn't mentioned in the introduction of that slide, and that was a discussion that we'd had with MGADA previously, and that was about the way UNESCO, I know it's an issue that study group members and then people in the wider ICANN community may have a concern about how can we go out and test this methodology, how do we go out and survey member states when we need to pick 20 or 25, how do we do that in a fair and balanced way? And I think the conversation had come down to, well, if it is a test of the process and if there is a possibility of later in this process consulting all member states or at least sending a notification or a request for information to all member states, it would be most expeditious to identify those states who are most likely to respond in an efficient way, if they have the capability and there's established networks that they'll respond back in good time. That said, dividing the 2025 up amongst geographic regions so that there's a fair coverage there. That may still lead to concerns or claims of favouritism, those that have the resources to participate and respond promptly to UNESCO. But that's why I think the April steps about that MGADA mentioned about a newsletter or an official invitation, but then also advertising it in a newsletter and making all member states aware of it, such that should they choose to, should they self-nominate to respond to this trial survey, that could be factored in as well. MGADA, that was your understanding of the conversation we've had, wasn't it? Or have
yeah, exactly.
I misrepresented that?
Exactly. We can use different channels. I mean, the most easiest and fastest is newsletter. We will have as well some other meetings with member states in, if I'm not mistaken, mid of April, where we'll be as well, we would have an opportunity to inform our member states. First of all, permanent delegations, which are in Paris, and where the first our partners here in Paris we work in as well, national commissions, which are at home and home countries, and we can inform them what this process will be going on. For example, by that time, I would presume we would have our survey done already, technically, and we could invite them if someone is interested to do it. But of course, we would make clear what this is, testing process. This is why not all member states are, you know, involved in this process. And we could as well inform them that once the survey, the typology is kind of more or less approved, we agree that it is it's useful, is finalized. We could do a second step in, and invite all other countries to contribute. Having said this, and of course we don't know what kind of response we'll receive it, but it's very clear what would indicate that this is a test phase. So this is why all member states are not consulted.
Mm-hmm. And specifically, we're testing not only the topology, not only the categories that we're using, but also the process.
Yes.
Is this working? Does it make sense? And is it going out effectively and therefore drawing back appropriate responses?
Paul?
I'm sorry?
Martin and Avery have...
Yes, I've got that. Sorry, I hadn't let Avery yet know that I would get to her, but Martin was on my list. Sorry, Martin, you had your hand up first.
Yeah, thanks, Paul. And sorry for joining late. I was caught up on another call. That's actually very helpful, Ngada. I think that it was sort of causing me a little bit of concern to see how we might be able to go through and get a representative selection. My sort of question has partly been sort of dealt with as Paul has sort of talked us through this, but I'm sort of wondering how important for a survey like this will be to make sure that we've got quite a good mixture of different language types or language groups or script groups. And so my concern is that you know, unless we get a good mix, unless we get one from the sort of Chinese, Japanese, Korean, unless we get one from the sort of different scripts that use Arabic, that we might actually find that we're missing something that is actually going to cause concern. So that's the question I'd like to sort of hear how you feel about getting that good mix. Thanks.
I fully agree with you what we need, a good mix, and this is what, when I call it here in March, survey preparation, and we have pre-selection criteria. I would presume from my side, from personally, I think that it should be one of the criteria what we would have this good mix of different languages and scripts used. So when we'll be selecting from each region few countries, maybe these are the countries which should be kind of taken into consideration. So it would be one of the pre-selection criteria. This is what I could propose to have it. And I believe that this is it's very important to reflect this diversity of scripts around the world.
It may appear, just to back up what Amgada said there, it may appear as though we're trying to be expeditious with this process and move it through as quickly as possible. But it's also important to note that UNESCO has been nothing but accommodating in terms of us being able to get results that are reflective of our community. So there has never been an obstacle in this process put in front of us that the study group will be limited in terms of the countries, the scripts, the languages, etc., that we would survey. The only limitation is, for the sake of our methodology, is how do you identify 2025 and therefore cover all of the scripts, cultures, languages, etc. in the world, which is impossible, but we can try and get a reasonable representation. And as Ngad has just said, that will be the intention all the way through the process. The pre-selection, there's no reason, there is no doubt it will be discussed through the study group. I'm not quite sure exactly, like right now, in terms of how that selection process would go. other than we would all share it, we would all discuss trying to meet in an effective way as possible of identifying a really broad group. It's going to be hard. We will not cover everyone in 20-25 countries. But I think I'm hoping that all collectively we can discuss that. And as I said, there's been no limitations or procedural limits put on us by UNESCO. So it's really about a case of us getting perfectly clear on what we're asking for, and then they can help us deliver that. So I hope to an extent that answers your question, Martin. It's not a definitive answer yet, but just a general one about an acknowledgement about the need for broad representation and hopefully a commitment to a process that will help us get that.
I think that's it. Mgada's comments was actually sort of quite useful. Like you were recognizing, can't get everything in 2025, but that the selection criteria are looking for getting that mix is important, so I'm feeling quite happy with that. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Martin. Look, that definitely becomes an immediate body of work for us, an offline discussion for between me and Mgada and others about, in the first instance, how these selection criteria might need to be identified, and then sharing with the group very, very quickly thereafter how that might manifest itself in terms of the selection of 20 to 25 countries. Just going to move on to the next question. Avery, you had your hand up for a little while. Sorry, it took a while to get to you.
Okay, thank you. This is Avery. Okay, and I apologize for having been slow to get up to speed on this group, even though, as I say, I'm only an observer, I think. This is just a test of a fuller survey, if I'm understanding. I'm wondering, the UNESCO community is wider than just the member states. It has many institutions that it accredits as participants. And I'm just wondering about the multi-stakeholder nature of ICANN when doing a survey with UNESCO, only reaching out to UNESCO's nation state, member state, and for example, what does that leave out? Are we aware of that? It leaving out all consideration, for example, of indigenous group issues that may or may not come up and be relevant to the questionnaire as it's brought up. So I miss a discussion, I'm sure I did if it happened, a discussion on why the other organizations that are accredited to the UN system and UNESCO aren't also somehow part of the pre-survey, and are they intended to be part of the greater full survey? Thank you.
Avery, thank you, and thank you for your input. You're not joining the process late at all. The commentary that we've received from you is great, and as I've let you know offline personally, this is precisely the type of dialogue I was trying to get moving in this group. With regards to UNESCO, in the first instance, the methodology that we've adopted to date is just one based upon the convenience, for the lack of a more artful word, the convenience of the agreement that existed between ICANN and UNESCO regarding mutual assistance, the expertise that's embodied in UNESCO and the channels and the networks that we as a study group can exploit to try to gather as much information as possible. That said, I acknowledge that from a methodological perspective, from an academic perspective, the work that we do is we aim to be as expansive as possible while at all times explaining to all stakeholders that us saying nothing is off limits, we're trying to gather as much information as possible. It's not meant to be interpreted as a land grab by one element of the ICANN community. We want to identify all the problems we can, all of the issues that are out there, even just a statement of these are the policies that we have and these are the country and territory name representations that we have, map the two together and see where the gaps are. And UNESCO has been engaged simply because That avenue was readily available to us. That dialogue was one that was already in existence, and it's something that we've decided to use. That said, we wouldn't want to limit our processes. We're not necessarily going to limit ourselves to just the formal member state network. It's just going to be a case of us then moving on to other avenues of consultation. This is step one, and the most important thing to note is something that I said earlier, and that is we're not just testing the categories and the topology that we're developing, but also the process for consultation. If we get a whole bunch of UNESCO member states coming back saying or providing answers that don't necessarily fit in, or that we don't understand, or coming back and saying the survey that you've developed makes no sense to us, then that's what we're testing, and that's valid feedback in and of itself.
Yes.
Sorry, go ahead.
I totally appreciate that, and I'm actually very, very happy to see somebody testing the test. Following that kind of rigor. And I wasn't suggesting going outside of UNESCO. I understood that this was, but the UNESCO network is larger than just its network, its member states. It includes within itself a number of methods for reaching out to the UN system accredited, whether it's through ECOSOCO, through UNESCO itself. It's participating IGOs, NGOs, and some private sector organizations. So I'm just wondering, within the UNESCO context, not speaking of what we did next with all of ICANN's multi-stakeholders, but UNESCO itself has multi-stakeholder processes in place in many cases. So I was just wondering about the use of those. I wasn't speaking of going outside UNESCO's organizational structure.
Thank you. Go ahead.
This is Mgarda. Yes, this is very relevant comment where we can reach our other networks, because UNESCO has, it's true that we have a lot of accredited organizations which are associated with UNESCO, and we have our other UN system organizations we work very closely. But in order to do it, it has to be a need, and it has to be communicated by this working group, because what we understand, and please correct me if I'm wrong, we understand that from this working group you want to have a reliable kind of feedback. And when it comes to country and territory names, this is something what it relates to still governmental institutions. And in this process, when you see, when we ask member states, we will be nominating national institution, and most likely it will be public institution, or in some cases could be as well an NGO working in that country which is responsible or is capable to complete the survey. And in this case, this is how we will be reaching at least one part of our networks. It's true what we can share with other UN agencies, with accredited NGOs and private institutions, but that is a question, do we have now to mix with several different target audiences? Because at least our impression was that the group aims to have data coming back from governmental level, basically trying to ensure that the reply is as much as possible is official. Because if you have an institution which is works in this field at country level, it may not have all the necessary kind of responsibilities and obligations to reply on behalf of the country. So it is again a question for this working group, do we need to do it? Because if it's needed, we could have another process consulting with other institutions, or at the same time, that of course becomes a much more bigger process, longer process most likely, and more complex. But it's the question is, what is our final objective, what we are aiming, because we are speaking about data collection, but we want to know what this data has to contribute to something else. So it's true that it's possible to do it, but this is what maybe first of all we would like to hear is, what is your opinion? Do we really need to go to those other target audiences?
I have a comment. Can I ask?
Yes, please.
I'll put myself in.
So I think the one of the question is, who will send this survey for answers? who will be author of this survey, ICANN or UNESCO?
We will be reaching out, already having approval of this working group and ICANN. So we'll be referring to both institutions at the same time, but invitation will be sent from UNESCO.
Okay, so one official organization.
Yes, but of course we will be referring immediately to a working group and ICANN. We will not act alone.
Wait a minute. UNESCO headquarters will send this survey to national commissions. Am I right?
Yes, and permanent delegations, yes.
And permanent delegations.
Yes.
So it means official UNESCO headquarters will ask for answers for from UNESCO national commissions.
You see,
well,
here
that
May, we have to help us to reach out those institutions which will have a right to reply. So internally, member states have to decide which institution will be responsible to come back, because this is what we say, April, May 2012. You see, there is an official response. So we would expect what permanent delegations or national commissions would come back to us and say, this is a title, this is an institution. We agreed internally what one institution will be responsible to response, to provide the response officially.
Wait a minute. It means that UNESCO can send its request only to national commissions. Because UNESCO has no enough power to send its request to, let's say, prime minister or president.
I'm sorry, it's Paul here. I think at this stage we're getting a little too deep into the specificities of the mechanisms of how this will go out. I actually meant to stop that conversation just a little bit further back, and that was with at the point where Avery had made her valid observations about will it be UNESCO, will it be associated organisations, will it be networks that are connected to UNESCO, at which point I was going to say that is a good discussion and one that we will have. And I suspect the issue that we're getting to right now is another one that we need to get into in depth in Costa Rica, given that we're already past the halfway point of this call. So I want to flag both of those. That is the extent. Part of what Mgada had covered was we need to know exactly what we're asking and from whom we are asking that and how we want it to go out. And they are quite willing to facilitate that. So that's a discussion that this study group needs to have first or needs to continue before we take that back to UNESCO further, and specifically to whom the survey is going out and how it is communicated is, again, a more in-depth discussion that we should just put aside temporarily to have, if I can park that, given that we're more than 30 minutes in, to have for a few hours in Costa Rica. I do need to move on because I've got many slides to cover, so I'm sorry about that. Avery, you are back first again, and then Annabeth. Avery, did you have something?
I guess, yes, just one quick point, and then I guess it saves it for the discussion, is that if we're only looking for official languages, yes, the governments would be the only one with the expertise and authority. But the survey goes way beyond that. I think we have to go way beyond that.
Yeah, look, I'll get to that later on in methodology, so thanks for that. Annabeth, you had your hand up. Was there something that you wanted to add at this moment?
Just to add what you said, actually, you said most of it, but since UNESCO will be sending out something, it will be natural to get the GAC into this process. But I'm sure you already thought of that. We can discuss that in Costa Rica.
Yes, absolutely. Just to answer that, to address that point very quickly, we have for the CCNSO session with GAC, that is an agenda item, and again, it's for the, and I know this is a group with participants from all constituencies, but CCNSO, given we convene this group, will be meeting with GAC. This will be on the agenda for that session. I'll give a quick briefing. I've already spoken to some members of the GAC. And I've sent an email to Heather Dryden, the chair of the GAC, about this issue. So really, yes, it is something that we're discussing with the GAC so that they are aware and not surprised that we are then going back to their capitals through a different mechanism, through a different avenue to raise these issues. So in brief, yes. Now, look, I'm sorry, I do need to move forward just a little more quickly because we do have quite a bit to cover. That was the process. That was, roughly speaking, the process diagram of how this would go through UNESCO, and I've noted the extra things that we need to take care of in terms of who does that involve engaging and how will we do it, etc. That will be a discussion that we can continue on with.
Paul, would it be possible just to reply to the question which came from the last gentleman? I didn't note his
sure.
name. UNESCO and, of course, rich presidents and ministries and prime ministers and Ministry of Culture, Technology and so on, that is, it has to be a purpose why we are contacting them. And with a survey like this, I would doubt that we really need to go to the president of the country. But when there is a specific need to do it, we always do it. So just to make clear that, of course, we had access to those people at national level.
Noted. And again, if we need to have a more detailed discussion about established protocols, diplomatic protocols and UNESCO protocols, happy to devote a little bit of time to that in Costa Rica. Avery, I've taken your note online that, yes, absolutely, I will attempt to brief the ALAC about this in Costa Rica, if not verbally and in person, then certainly by briefing notes so that all constituencies are aware of what is going on in this group. Annabeth, did you still have a further question or your hand's still up from before?
No, it's fine. No, nothing further.
No.
Not so far.
Sorry, thank you. Look, now I'm going to try to move on a little bit more quickly because this is the meat of what I really wanted to cover as soon as possible, as extensively as possible in this conversation. The next slide talks about the development of pathology, and this is largely covering what we've discussed already. This is a tool. This is a research project. This is what we're using to try to get a decent understanding of how complex the idea of country and territory names is. People have already, in this group, have already commented. We've received feedback from UNESCO about how we would go about developing a topology, and we really need, in order to meet our deadlines, to arrive at some sort of agreement and some sort of mutual understanding by Costa Rica, because UNESCO has to go away and do their work. Whether that means that there needs to be additional briefing to sectors of the community or for the group to discuss at greater length the fact that this is a test of a test, and that hopefully that provides enough comfort to everyone that we can get moving forward. I hope we can achieve that at Costa Rica. If we do not, we are starting to fall behind our established timelines. Again, just to go back to an earlier slide, we're looking at a delivery deadline of somewhere around this study group delivering some sort of report at the end of this year. We didn't have a definite deadline, but it was basically before the second round of new GTLDs, the second round of new GTLDs is launched. None of us knows when that will be. The ICANN board has recently made a commitment to there being a second round, but we have to assume that if all the stars align and miracles occur, that it could be just over a year's time. So we have to aggressively aim for the end of this year so that our input could be meaningfully considered. This will, of course, be an input to the CCNSO Council in the first instance, having convened the group. But then for whatever they then recommend out of this process to get moving as soon as possible, given the timelines we're working to. Now just moving on, the following few slides are about the specific headings and the categories that I had in the survey document that I had sent to everyone a couple of days ago. There are a few things that are not in there that were in the previous draft, and I'll address that at the end, but I did want to devote an entire slide to each one because there were people that raised issues about a number of them, and I wanted to work through them rather than to just dismiss the comments we'd received. We'd proposed to start with the ISO 3166-1 Alpha 2 and possibly Alpha 3 codes, and the survey basically being set as a questionnaire, asking questions rather than a simple table, because that allows us to actually explain what we're asking for and what we'd like to receive back in a little more detail. So, therefore, what are your country or territories' 2- and 3-letter representations on said ISO list would be the starting point. Now, I note the comments that we received from Avery and Yap about how relevant is that. This is starting to sound a little expansive. I'm sorry, I'm paraphrasing. This can, again, certainly sound like a land grab or a lean towards country codes, towards CCs, because, well, by the very nature of the survey, we are starting from the ISO list, which is the basis upon which all of us exist. So I'm just noting that that's acknowledged, and it will always seem to be leaning this way for the start of the process. The reason I proposed to, and we discussed, a number of us had discussed why three-letter codes might be in there, is because, look, it's a political terminology here in Australia and a number of other countries. It's a Dorothy Dixer. It's the easy, straight-up question, the loaded question, the straight-up question which just requires a check of a form and a response, or a check of an existing data source and a response. So it's a factual statement. We could go and look these up ourselves, but we want them to answer this question. I can understand how there would be some concerns that the fact that we're asking about three-letter codes and the fact that they already exist as GTLDs, and that's never been an issue in the past. It doesn't matter. We're just trying to establish the various usages of these country and territory representations. It doesn't matter whether it's in an official sense or whether it's in a cultural or a social sense, how .co's used versus how .com's used, and how neither of them represents Comoros. It doesn't matter. It's just to try to gain as much information as possible. And that's why I wanted to use that as a starting point. Were there any particular comments? Sorry, I was going to move on as quickly as possible, but were there any comments about that one as our starting point in particular? I'm conscious of not rushing through it. Thank you. As I said, the comments we received today have been noted, and we'll work through them further. I hope we can provide enough assurance to everyone that for the sake of being expansive for a survey, then hopefully that's an acceptable basis for us to start our work. Question two was about official and conventional long-form names. This is one where I admit I am struggling. I don't have a definitive answer, and the commentary that I'd received back from a number of people admitted that they didn't have a definitive answer either, and I fully acknowledge that official name means nothing in some cases, doesn't mean anything to particular administrations, to particular countries, and that the term name used for administrative purposes might be a bit verbose or a bit obscure and not mean anything to other respondents, which is why I'm trying to stick a few together, or stick a few of these terms together in one question. What is your country territory's official name or conventional long form name or name used for administrative purposes, and that we would then include a UNGGN definition or something else. This is something I want everyone to really devote a bit of thought to. Is there any other way that we could refer to it that means something? I don't want to limit ourselves, and I've already thrown in two or three descriptions of if this term doesn't mean anything to you, does this? Are there any? This relates to question two. Survey question three as well, as proposed, which was about the short form name, Commonwealth of Australia, the long form, Australia, the short form. In unfortunate, in my particular example, that might actually mean something. But are there any other ways that which could this could be described that would be meaningful? Yeah, I'm sorry, I see you have your hand up. Would you like to comment?
Yes, I would like to. I don't know how you will put the question, but seeing regularly the long form of the names being changed, as of 2 weeks ago, Hungary changed its long name, and because they have a new constitution, and this happens really quite often, and more often than you think. And so you might, I don't know how, formulated, but you might want to get some idea about the stability of the long name. Because if it really changes with every president, as it did with Bolivia, I mean, you might wonder whether you probably want to have some feeling about it. I mean, how to ask that.
All right, thank you for that observation. I think that relates to both these questions and also some of the other points that I'd raise later in the survey about the relevance of historical names and also about the difficulty of capturing, well, the impossibility of capturing future names, even if they are immediate future and ones we can see that are imminent for the purposes of this sort of survey. Broadly speaking, and not to to make it sound dismissive, but given our time limits and the limitations of resources and time that we have now, we necessarily focus on the here and now, the responses that we receive immediately. A methodology or a survey is always limited by the time frame in which it's undertaken. It becomes outdated the instant it is finished and the instant it's published. The best we can aim for is something that's a current snapshot of the way things are now, and hope the questions we ask provide us a thorough enough response so that our methodology sort of stands sound for a while. The whole idea is we would take the feedback that we get from this process, and acknowledging that we get really, really buried in the process for a long time, take what we get from this process and then put that into a more academic document that we work together as an issues paper that we identify as a group, which may simply have headings that say there is great volatility in the official long form, short form, etc., names of countries, and just due to the obvious nature of political instability and changes and the way the world does change, that is something that needs to be factored in or something that should be considered when we weigh that up against ICANN policy processes. That flexibility needs to be there. That's just something that I'll park for the time being, but just note, yes, obviously that's a concern, obviously that's an issue, but for the purposes of question two and three, I am really struggling for us to try to find a word, a term, a description, something for how is your country known? How, you know, what, if I ask you what the name of your country is, what will you provide? And how do we word that in a way that is widely understood? Heather, you had your hand up?
If I can, a quick reaction. I really, I do think so that, I mean, in a document describing the survey, it is probably a better place to notice. And I might actually probably go to the archives of 3166 and compile a list of all the long names which have been changed.
I'm going to phone the conference.
Well, that would certainly be very useful.
I will be leaving after very soon.
Thank you for that. Heather, you were you there? Sorry, in Heather's absence, Martin, I think you had your hand up next.
Yeah, thanks, Paul. Yeah, certainly I can see your problem of exactly how people might define what their name actually is. One thought that just went across my mind was whether you've used examples in the paper, maybe referred to as conventional long form name or name used for its purpose, to which I guess actually if you added or name used for other purposes and actually seek people, give people an opportunity to say where a particular form of their name might be used. And that, I think, then gives sort of an opportunity for us to move forwards for people to put their hand up and say, well, actually, you know, there is a special case here, rather than for us to spend where there might be special cases related to that. Otherwise, I fear that we might never quite get out of this one. And the other little question I had was your reference to the official language in the paper, not on the slide, for question two, and also flagged up on question three. And I actually wondered whether that was actually relevant in there, in that it doesn't say, like some other countries, I don't think English is an official language of the United Kingdom. But in this particular case, you're actually not asking about what languages that they are using, but rather actually saying, you know, here is an official or a conventional long-form name or short-form name, and therefore the official language reference perhaps is best under question 5 from
Yes, Martin, absolutely noted. Sorry, I'm getting a bit of cross-chatter. I don't know if everybody else is, so if those who are speaking could possibly mute. I know that Heather's having a bit of difficulty getting online at the moment, but we can take that discussion afterwards. But from what I picked up from your comments, Martin, yes, absolutely agreed. This is always the problem with a survey. How do you ask the question as open-endedly as possible so as it makes sense to all respondents? Do you have special examples? Do you have special exceptions, et cetera, et cetera, without them making it so verbose that the thing doesn't actually, it isn't 42 pages and doesn't actually make sense to anyone who receives it. So we are just trying to find a descriptor that would, we're not trying to make this complicated, but just a simple term that will, and this is again something that I'll park for Costa Rica and we can come back to, but how we describe it in that sort of official language, the long form name, the official name, the long form name, something along those lines that means something. I'll need to move on, conscious of time, so Heather, thank you. I noticed your comments, and I know it's problematic to try to convey this in the chat room. Heather's noted that in international law, her experience suggests that official name has two meanings, internal and external. They're the sorts of feedback that I would greatly, Heather, I welcome that, and you know, we need to discuss that as much as we can so that we get an understanding of it, all of us collectively as a group, and then only once we're clear can we make sense to other people. So certainly if we could share that as much as possible amongst ourselves and get an answer there. Yes, by the way, Martin, on the second point that you raised, you're absolutely right. For the purposes, as I'm bringing it up now, for the document that I sent around, yes, the issue of official language is one that I'd left in there from a previous document. Not immediately relevant here. We're talking about official name. But, yes, it is relevant later on about some countries would not have an official language, and that may be problematic, but that's noted as well. Just to quickly move on, conscious of time, and I have too many windows open. The fourth survey question was about your country and territory name in the six official languages of the UN. This is not meant to be comprehensive. We list them, even though the risk of insulting the intelligence of respondents, we list all the languages of the UN. Again, this is meant to be a relatively simple question, and these it's hopefully one that will give us at least input. It's not comprehensive, but it's something that... at least gives us a little bit of information and I hope isn't contentious. Everybody understands the six official languages of the UN, and that's meant to just be a starting point. Hopefully, at least we get something gathered there. That would then move on to question five, which again we've tried to build a barrier around an open, completely open-ended question, and that is, what is the name of your country or territory? What is the name that you use for the other participants in this survey, and they could be identified to each other when the survey goes out. How do you refer to them in your language or languages? Again, that's just an attempt to not limit it completely, but at least give them something they can have a go at. Here are the other 19 or possibly 24 respondents. We hit other problems. How is the respondent going to know what the official, you know, that it, there are other potential difficulties, but hopefully at least you can say, look, these are, please describe the in your language the other, the country and territory name of the other participants. That should give us something interesting. It's not meant to be all-encompassing. We get to that in some later questions. And I am hurrying now, but question six was about examples of other commonly used or local names. This was included as a catch-all, as I've identified in the next slide. It's intentionally open. You would not capture Holland under the categories that we'd mentioned previously, but please, could you provide some other examples? Again, this isn't comprehensive, but you would hopefully solicit some more responses. And again, the thing I would note here is that we ask for examples or citations that the respondents may be able to provide. I believe that that may address the issue that was identified by a number of respondents within our study group. Where does the authority come from? Where is the reference? Where is the who's the authoritative source? At least whoever responds to this can say, well, we say so, or we provide this information based upon X, because we've asked them. And I'm sorry, I just changed to another phone because I drained the battery on the last one. I'm sorry, was that a comment or just a bit of background noise? I'm sorry, Martin, you had another question?
Yes, thanks, Paul. It's for question six. I wonder whether it would make sense to also repeat question five for them, so that they say what the common name would use for the difference on the list, rather than just the more official forms. And the obvious one here, it's many people around the world will call my country England, and I certainly not. And so actually giving an opportunity to capture where there is this sort of variation, this variation might actually be quite useful.
Are we also adding, so just to be clear here, Martin, it's not just examples of your country or territory or the other commonly used or local names you might have for your country or territory, but the common or local, the common names you in your language might use for the other respondents, countries, and territories.
Yeah, that's
starts getting
right.
A bit starts getting a bit confusing there, doesn't it?
Yeah, but essentially it would allow some of those historical names that are actually still quite firmly in use to be captured. So for example, talking about Congo, people talking about Burma. It doesn't matter how often the country names are changed by the governments in power, those names quite often lived up.
This is where we start treading that very fine line. Avery, if you wish, by all means, look, your concern about this particular case is noted. If you wish to chip in, by all means. This is where we start towing that very delicate line, and where I need to be most adamant about
we're not looking for a definitive response, we're not looking for a comprehensive response, and we also don't want to raise any expectations on the part of respondents, and especially cause any disappointment amongst those who were not asked regarding the descriptions of particular names. We don't want to make it too political, but we don't want to then be so sensitive that this process has no meaning. And I acknowledge this is where we start getting into that grey area where it could get potentially sensitive, not just from a political perspective, but also, you know, within ICANN. Why are you asking about such broad examples, etc.? The general response I give is, well, if Holland or England is not captured anywhere else under any other sort of heading, that's fine. We can ignore it for the purposes of our survey. We can determine that that's too contentious. When that creature comes up as something that we have to face as part of round two of new GTLDs and how is that handled, it'll be handled somehow. I imagine there'll be a big hand, collective hand going up from GAC with objections. But then we haven't really done our job in terms of scoping the field and identifying all the potential issues that are out there. We should find this a really liberating exercise, that we can actually work through all these issues and not be limited because we have to be sensitive or find a response. But that said, acknowledge, this is where we start getting into that sort of grey space. I'm sorry, I'm going to move. Avery, did you want to chip in any more on that right now, or we'll take that into Costa Rica?
No, I was mute. That's why I really just put my note in the chat to have made it but not take up time.
Yeah, sure. Look, I'm sorry, we've already hit an hour,
no,
but I'll just move.
I didn't raise my hand.
Yeah, no worries. Look, I'll move on quickly. Speaking of contentious territory, what I then put in as Section 7 was minority Indigenous languages. So it's sensitive, but it's also important. We're looking for examples. This is not meant to be comprehensive, but to not raise the question of commonly used minority or local community languages, if you don't identify as a specific category, it may not necessarily be identified. And I also acknowledge that going through an intergovernmental organisation to member states may not necessarily reflect the full range of examples and input that we might gather. But by the same token, that's why it's so important that we actually ask the question. So that's why I put the two in terms of Indigenous languages, but then also minority, so migrant populations that may have a significant presence in a particular country that may refer to it in a particular way. Again, a government authority is not, you know, going to be the definitive source necessarily for all of these responses. It's a difficult one, and we need to ask a lot of people that question. So, Avery, again, noted that others may have may actually provide us a lot more input, and for the sake of our, as I keep banging on, our process needs to be sound. So to do that, we might need to get this survey locked down, and then also, once it makes sense to UNESCO member states, maybe it's generic enough to send out to others. Just quickly, question 8, not 7, example of their name in non-official languages. This is a really difficult one. This is the catch-all. This is the one at the end which says, and will give rise to concerns, are there any other examples of your country name not in your own languages? And I think, you know, there are any number of examples. How would anyone else in the world who does not use the 6 official languages of the UN, how would they describe your country name, Australia, in Polish? It's difficult, it's open-ended, it will not necessarily deliver a comprehensive response, but again, it's intended to be a catch-all. Grigori raised some examples there about Georgia and Armenia, and they wouldn't have necessarily, their mutual descriptions wouldn't have slotted into any other category. That's what that one is intended to try to capture. And then finally, what I dropped from this topology, and that was historical names, because it's hard, and the relevance is I understand the relevance, but if we're limited by time and resources, should we focus on the here and now? Primary and simplex names, because they're difficult to explain, and largely, for the most part, but not exactly, if you can describe conventional short-form names, it might cover most of it. Composite names, these were things like Mount Cook, were a bit difficult. So they were a little bit complicated to explain. And exonyms, again, would mostly be picked up, I suspect, from most survey respondents under name in non-official languages. I did zoom through them very quickly. Everyone can see the document and provide their own thoughts about that. So I'd greatly appreciate that. Sorry, Annabeth Henry, I'm not sure who was first. Annabeth, do you had your hand up?
Yes, just a question. When you talked about the examples of... do you hear me?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, okay. Examples of naming non-official languages. Will that cover, for example, in a lot of countries, a language is not an official language, it's not an administrative language, but it's spoken by a large population in the country. Like in Norway, we have a big or a large population speaking Urdu,
mm-hmm.
and I suppose they could wish to have Norway in Urdu, but it's not official language, it's not administrative language.
Which for example, that, yes, that would be the intent, yes.
Yeah, well, that's
but,
what
sorry,
you mean
go ahead.
With that. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, it is the intent to cover that, but then, of course, that gets back to the issues of who we are asking this question of and would we necessarily expect relevant agencies within national administrations or even if they are NGOs nominated by member states of UNESCO to necessarily provide that response. Yes, we're intending to capture all of that. The more that we can gather and the if I had a list of 150 representations of Australia, then my process is all the more thorough than if I have two or three. So gathering all of these with the common understanding of everyone that's asked and everyone participating in the survey that this is not a reservation list nor raising expectations, but we're just trying to gather as much data as possible, then that's what I would be very happy with. So, yes, if we could... get that conveyance of non-official names, acknowledging that asking UNESCO will get some response, but we may need to go out to other stakeholders. Henry, I think you are next.
Thank you, Paul. I would like to record my support for the current approach and would like to point out that precisely because some names are sensitive and controversial, and some languages are sensitive and controversial, that we need to include them in this study. We are not now making any policy yet, but to present an objective picture of the current situation of country and territory names. So I would like to record my support for the current approach. Thank you.
Henry, thank you. Greatly appreciated. When I'm standing up there sweating about the fact that we very courageously raised some very pointed and very controversial examples, it would be good to have the backing of the study group, because that's exactly what we're trying to do here. Not our purpose to answer the questions, just to raise them and identify the possible concerns. Martin, you had your hand up.
Yeah, thanks. And yes, you know, we fully support you. We'll be right behind you, Paul.
Yeah, the bull will go through me. Thanks. Yeah, go ahead.
On question 8, just to flag that that can be an incredibly long list.
Yes.
So just as simple examples, the National Health Service in the UK, in addition to English and Welsh, has 12 languages which it regularly provides information in, and when we did the census a couple of years back, then there were guidance books in 56 different languages, just trying to pick out the most common immigrant communities that were still using a lot of their own paternal languages.
Yeah.
That's not to say we shouldn't put it in. It's just that in some cases I think it could actually be quite profit.
Yeah, look, I acknowledge that asking a question like that could potentially cause problems. I'll use an example of personal experience. When Dot Travel was established, they asked all national administrations to reserve all their geographic names. I worked for the Australian government at that stage. We took a very defensive position, and we provided Dot Travel with a list of 300,000 names, including Three Mile Stump, that we would like to have reserved for the purposes of Dot Travel. They wish they had never asked that question. It's hard asking the open-ended ones, but for the purposes of this survey, I'm quite comfortable to or would be amused to see what we could get back. Look, now that we're quite a few minutes over, I think we're about to lose the link, so all I wanted to finish off with was just to flag that... Is everybody still hearing me? Bart, are you still there?
Yes, I'm still here.
Sorry, I was just getting a lot of beeping there on the line,
yeah,
so...
I think we all got it.
Excellent. I'm glad I'm not alone, otherwise I'm talking to myself. Look, just the next step. There was a whole bunch of stuff there that was in that last version of the document. I'm really making an effort to cut things hard and leave things out on purpose so that people can scream, no, that should still be in there. The things that are included, again, that gives people, and I've noted all the comments that have been made today about, well, that's going to lead to problems in these various ways. What I'll make an undertaking to do is summarise what we've discussed and then send a document out to the group that's not too different to what I sent out a couple of days ago, but just to say, look, this is where our thinking's at, and we're getting to the point where we need to decide what we're asking UNESCO to, as a survey, by Costa Rica. That's really the deadline I'm setting. As I mentioned to people on the mailing list, we're having two meetings, one official one and one sort of after meeting. Originally, the session was scheduled for Thursday, but I realised that given that CCNSO finishes Wednesday and other constituencies finish their core work Wednesday, some people will be on the road or departing Thursday. Therefore, our session's on Monday. This will have full teleconference facilities, etc., and you'll be able to get remote access. The idea then is, because you do most of the work on this sort of stuff while you're at an ICANN meeting, let's face it, we can then take it away and get two bites of the cherry, so to speak, and then circulate some things amongst ourselves over the couple of days while we're there, and we have the facility reserved for us on Thursday if we deem necessary to meet again and just have an informal discussion for those that happen to be without all of the external participation facilities, just for people to have another chat for those of us that are in Costa Rica. But as I've made the undertaking, all of that will then be conveyed by me back to all members of the study group. It's just an attempt to having two goes at this at one meeting instead of just one. So again, look, that's really the goal. We've got to get through the finalisation of this survey, identifying these categories, locking them down so that they make some sense, so that we can get it out to UNESCO, and then as step two, part of that, out to who else? Who else can we go out to effectively at the same time? If this is a questionnaire, there's no reason that it needs to go out to one entity. Avery's made some great suggestions about, well, hey, this should go out to others. If we've got 3 months to do that, have we got the resources and the mechanisms and the means by which to get it out to them, or even, more importantly, task our good colleagues at ALAC and say, well, do you have the resources by which to, or the communities by which to get this out? The more times we do that, I think the better sort of response we'll get, and the bit more confident we can feel that we've done a good job consulting with everyone. Again, sorry to wrap it up so quickly, and sorry also for running about 15 minutes over time. Very briefly, again, once we've locked everything down, we'll then start having a chat as we head towards Prague about the issues that we see. It'll be hard to start that conversation before we start getting any sort of evidence back, but that will be our next step. And given that that's going to take us quite a while,
and we'll already be heading to mid-year by that point. That's why I'm keen to get this survey sort of finalised and out to whomever we should choose to send it to. Thanks, everyone, for your time today. I'll send a note out in the next sort of 48 hours summarising all of this, trying to make it really clear what we want to cover in Costa Rica. We won't be as time-limited there, so hopefully we can have a really in-depth discussion. And speak to you all soon. Safe travels if you're coming to San Jose, and see you there.
Okay. Thank you, Paul. Bye-bye.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Paul.
Thank you, Paul. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.